Hoopball Podcast listeners, are you a fantasy expert and want to write or podcast for Hoopball? Do you have aspirations of covering a team? Are you a master of sales and want to earn some cash on the phones? Well, we've got good news. Hoopball's recruiting. If you think you have what it takes, hit us up at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or by emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com. Again, that's at Hoopball Fantasy on Twitter or emailing teamhoopball at hoop-ball.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and children of all ages, we have a very, very special Hoopball Lakers podcast for you today because we have a very special guest. We have JC DeLeon returning to the show, your main man Ethan Norov here as always, and our very special guest, Emil Avanessian, who you can find on Twitter at Hardwood Hype, on his website, hardwoodhype.com. He's been on Form Blue and Gold. He's been on Silver Screen and Roll. He's been everywhere where you read Lakers content on the internet, and we're stoked to have him here with us as we prepare for the Lakers to get ready to head down to Orlando in a new context with a slightly different team. Emil, how are you, my man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm great, man. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure, man. So if you don't mind, just take a minute. Introduce yourself to our audience a little bit, tell them a little bit about you, and then we'll kick things off here.
Sure. So, you hit on sort of the where my work appears. My site has always kind of been the home, but I'm, as we were just talking about, I'm from LA, and sort of I'm a child of Showtime. I sort of the Lakers entered my consciousness in the mid-80s, so... I have to say I was spoiled from a young age. It was kind of downhill from there. And, thankfully Shaq and Kobe came along to sort of kind of rekindle some of those heights again. But, so I've kind of been a Laker fan for quite some time now. I guess like going on 35 years now. And, as of now, I'm actually also I'm living in Barcelona. And... So my wife and I decided last year to relocate to Barcelona. So I kind of did the reverse Gasol. And as a part of that as well, for a number of years, in addition to the NBA, I've been writing about European soccer and mainly FC Barcelona. That's not actually why I moved here. It's just a happy coincidence. But some of the other work that I've done, I've written for sites Barca Blog, Barca Blaugranas, and also I actually just recently did a massive sort of 10,000 word dive into a fever dream of a Barcelona game from like 23 years ago. And so that actually just came out. That's at the Blizzard or blizzard.co.uk. But otherwise, I mean, I've been a Lakers junkie for, you know, basically as long as I can remember. And it's been great. Actually, living here as well, the NBA is fairly popular here, and also wearing Lakers gear around Barcelona is very popular because everyone likes to stop and talk about Pau Gasol when they see that. So that's actually led to some fairly consistent, really good NBA conversations here as well.
That's fantastic. fantastic. And this just shows you, everybody who's listening, that the Hoopball Lakers show is officially international, baby.
Absolutely.
Just to get on that Pau Gasol note for a quick minute, because we're not going to spend too much time talking about it. But, you know, Pau recently said that he'd love to finish his NBA career. The Lakers are an attractive destination. Now, obviously, I don't think the Lakers are going to bring Pau into the bubble. And it's hard to believe that with extended time off with his foot injury, that they're going to seriously consider that option or alternative moving forward. But it is a fun part of the story. And I, for one, am looking forward when 16 hangs from the rafters, because I feel very strongly that the Lakers need to retire that number. Are you of that stance as well?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I can't say it emphatically enough. I mean, I was actually thinking about it. I think it was one of these kind of lockdown era Twitter conversations that I had. So I think Pau Gasol is actually probably my fourth favorite Laker of all time. And beyond that, I mean, I think I can make a case, I think, that he's probably the seventh best Laker of, maybe eighth best Laker of the LA era, and maybe ninth or tenth in the history of the team.
And I think he's one of those guys who's classically underrated by, just in terms of the scope of his NBA career, but especially his overall basketball career, and in particular his Lakers journey, because so many people just sort of accepted him as part of the picture when Kobe was at his peak. But I don't feel that Kobe wins those next two rings without Pau by his side.
No, Pau. Absolutely. Yeah, Pau was really underrated. I think people think the AD trade was unfair now. Back in the day when Pau was traded to the Lakers, like, I instantly knew. I was like, that's a chip right there with Pau.
People were screaming bloody murder about that trade. And, you know, I mean, I guess, of course, nobody knew that Mark was going to go on to be, you know, a fantastic player. I mean, I guess if people had known, it would have been less of a controversy. But yeah, I mean, that was, I remember being so unbelievably excited when the Lakers got him. I mean, because he was so kind of, he always felt like sort of the grown-up in the room, even when things were going completely haywire or there was drama and things like that. You could kind of trust that Pau wasn't gonna feed the fire, you know? And on top of that, he was just, I mean, he's one of the best big men of the era, passing, rebounding, just smarts, you know, he could shoot. I do think he's a little bit underrated. I think it was also so much of the success came at the start of his Lakers tenure. Because, like, what was it? They made the finals his first full year, I believe. Oh, no, there's even just the year they got him. Mm-hmm. And then there was the two championships. And then it was so awesome, like, the first couple years. But then that was when that whole team started to break down a little bit. There was the horrible sweep against Dallas. And then, you know, just kind of the Lamar Odom situation and everything. And then, you know, you had Kobe getting hurt. And it just kind of all – but Pau was still there all along, just being a really good player.
No doubt. And I think, you know, with Pau and during that whole heyday that was the Lakers' success, you kind of get normalized to a certain level of expectations or successes on the court, which can sometimes detract from the overall – production of an individual player or even a collective team. But I think we're all going to sit here and say, not only was Pau integral, he was one of the best Lakers ever, and he deserves his numbers up in the rafter. So we'll see if it comes to fruition with a full circle moment if he winds back up on the Lakers roster. I'm not going to say I'm optimistic about it, but I'm not going to say I'm pessimistic about it. It's a possibility, but one we'll revisit at a later day, because we know he's not going to come to the Orlando bubble, which is really what we're here to discuss.
Yeah.
And when it comes to this Lakers team, you look at this team up and down, and you have, you know, one of my earliest concerns, even going back to when the season was first paused, was, well, JaVale McGee has asthma, so I don't know if he'll be able to resume. But it's not that Lakers center we're going to focus on. We're actually going to focus on the other Lakers center, Dwight Howard. But before we even get to him, because we're still awaiting his decision, I want to talk to you guys about Avery Bradley, because Avery Bradley's obviously been one of the more outspoken players, along with Kyrie Irving and several others, when it comes to the issues of social justice. But the reason that Avery Bradley cited for his willingness to walk away from the team right now is family. And obviously he has a son who's got an immunocompromised condition, makes it very hard for him to recover. So Bradley's putting family over basketball. I don't think anyone can really blame him for that. I know some people will hold a selfish perspective. And I know a lot of these guys are saying, how can you sort of abandon the team at this time? But look, basketball is a means to an end. These guys love it, but they also have lives outside of the game, and family is the most important thing at the end of the day. So we know that the Lakers are not going to be having Avery Bradley. And one of the things that we were discussing before the show started, guys, was that Avery Bradley, if you kind of look at his production across just the box score in terms of his averages, there isn't anything that really pops out at you off the stat sheet. I mean, he 36.4% from downtown this year, which is decent enough to be a threat. I wouldn't call him a lights out shooter from out there. But the question I have for you guys is, you know, Avery Bradley, obviously on a team that's short perimeter defenders to begin with, his absence is going to create an even bigger impact. So you've got Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you've got Alex Caruso, and don't forget the Lakers also have Dion Waiters, and we'll get into the J.R. Smith story in just a minute, but of those three guys, Caruso, KCP, and Waiters, and I'll ask you guys both the same question, who do you think is the most important of those three to now step up and sort of help fill the void that will be created by Bradley's absence?
So, I mean, I think who is the most important? I mean, I think it's going to wind up, a lot of it's going to wind up falling on KCP. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Caruso's going to have to play, you know, I think fairly significant minutes. And I mean, honestly, he's, you know, I know there's all kind of the internet memeing and kind of the MVP chants and stuff like that, but like, he's a decent, good, useful player. And so I'm not that worried about Caruso playing more minutes. I mean, in fact, you know, as long as he's sort of healthy and capable, I think that's not a significant problem. But as far as the role that Avery Bradley plays, I think the most logical fit between, you know, is going to be KCP, or, you know, if, as far as that position goes, would be KCP, Dion Waiters, or J.R. Smith. And I think just given those three options, I mean, KCP has played the most basketball recently. He's a better player at this point, I think, than either of those other two. And he's been around this team longer. So, I mean, I think a lot of it's going to fall on him. It's, if he can be sort of, his highs are really high. The problem is, if he can be just pretty consistent, I think he can fill the void pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with him. I think rust is a big concern, especially looking at KCP and the way he started the season. Rust is definitely going to be a concern coming back, and he improved as the season went on. But when Avery Bradley came back from his leg injury, it sort of, he was the starter and KCP was coming off the bench. And so, yeah, I think KCP shifts up to be the starter, and Alex Caruso would get more minutes, but yeah, I'm with Emil. I wouldn't worry about Alex Caruso at all. Like, there's an article even from his former home, Silver Screen and Roll, in late February that talks about the highest net rating for a Laker besides Anthony Davis was Alex Caruso. He doesn't get a lot of counting stats, but his defensive impact is highly positive.
Oh, there's no question. And I think one of the biggest things is with Caruso is, you know, you're going to get that level of effort on the defensive end. And similar to KCP, and I want to go back to KCP for just a second, because I agree. It seems like with Bradley's absence, you put KCP into that starting lineup, you bring Caruso into KCP's bench role, and then Dion Waiters sort of fills in those spot minutes that would be overflow in the traditional rotation. I don't think that the J.R. Smith signing, if it becomes a signing, is going to be anything other than insurance policy for two reasons. One is because the Lakers have these three guards ahead of him, not to mention Rajon Rondo. And two, the more important factor here for me is, anyway, you know, I think generally when you're signing a guy to play NBA basketball, you want to make sure he's capable of competing at a certain level. J.R. Smith last played NBA basketball November 19th, 2018. That's almost two full years ago. So anyone sitting here saying, oh, J.R. Smith's going to come on the Lakers and be the three-point threat that this team is missing or anything along those lines, it is drinking out of the wrong cup. That might be J.R.'s, it might not be, who knows. But they're drinking out of the wrong cup, because I just don't see that as a realistic possibility. So if J.R. Smith is brought on as an insurance policy, so be it, as long as he doesn't disturb the dynamic. I don't think that he will on a team that includes LeBron James, because LeBron obviously keeps a close eye on him. But KCP as a starter, if you just look at his stats as a starter versus a sub from this season, he performs better as a starter. I don't know if he's more engaged because he's on the court when the game starts or if he just prefers that starter's role, but he actually, as a starter this year in 20 games, shot 43.4% from downtown so far compared to 37.2% when he's coming off the bench. So those are both good marks, but obviously as a starter, that's an excellent, that's an elite level of production from beyond the arc at 43.4%. My only concern with KCP is that as the season was ongoing before it was paused or suspended, we'll call it, his previous 2 months, January and February, he was actually trending down from where he was previously from behind the arc. So all of these guys have had the same layoff at this point. So I'm not going to just extrapolate stats and assume that production will continue. But I feel like given KCP's chemistry with the team, given his familiarity with the surroundings, so to speak, I think it makes sense that you're looking at him in a starter's role. I think it's also telling that, you know, we're really not talking about Rajon Rondo as a potential replacement here because he doesn't do enough offensively in terms of be a threat from downtown. We know he doesn't do enough defensively to sort of fill that void that Bradley's going to create. So I'm just curious, especially if the Lakers are going to bring in another guard, how Rajon Rondo might fit into this picture. And I don't want to say that I'm curious about Dion Waiters. I would think maybe intrigued would be a better word, but I don't know because they weren't even playing him before the season was suspended. Now he's had this additional layoff, so that has contributed to the amount of time he spent away from the court since he's actually been on the court wearing an NBA jersey. So I feel like the burden of the Bradley absence is going to fall more directly on Caruso and KCP. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for this Lakers team because even though a lot of people sat here before the season and said, well, depth is going to be an issue for the Lakers on a top-heavy team, I think Caruso and KCP are both individually but especially combined more than capable of being key rotation pieces on a team that's looking to contend for a title.
Yeah, I agree. And I think even before you get to considering J.R. Smith, like even with Rondo, there's the question of whether or not he could be playoff Rondo, as he sometimes tends to be. The J.R. Smith thing is interesting in that LeBron James-led teams typically do like adding a veteran, not for playing time, but just kind of to be that mature locker room presence. You think of Kendrick Perkins and like Dante Jones. Mature locker room presence isn't really something that I think anyone associates with J.R. Smith, and so it's kind of why it seems like an odd consideration.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as far as the locker room presence goes, I mean, I think, and I've personally never been at all a Dion Waiters guy either. And so, I mean, I don't see, and I agree that I think JR kind of makes more of a personality, more sense from a personality fit perspective because he has a relationship with LeBron. And I mean, I think JR is the type where he does actually defer to sort of, you know, accomplished veterans, whether it's LeBron, Anthony Davis, I mean, even like Danny Green, you know, like Danny Green's he's an experienced sort of championship winning guy. And so, I mean, I think there's a certain level of kind of built-in respect with some of the Lakers roster already that JR is just not going to want to sort of run afoul and disappoint, you know, sort of disappoint people or, you know, kind of, I don't know, like kind of draw the anger of his teammates. And so
yeah,
that I actually thought of that we, in the whole backcourt conversation that just occurred to me was I'm interested to see where Quinn Cook fits into everything too, because he, you know, I'm kind of pulling up his stats right now because I don't know what he did from a stats perspective, but I got the impression that he was sort of, you know, useful in spots and kind of knew how to play a role. And you know, that's obviously just kind of a byproduct of, you know, he had to learn how to fit in Golden State and things like that. And I think he's kind of good in that role. He's not a guy that, you know, you don't want to start him. Not necessarily. You don't want to sort of rely on him for big minutes. But I do think he's eventually, I think, going to sort of settle into a solid pro type of career, which, you know, he's arguably kind of in that sort of thing now, but just in very limited minutes. So I do think he's a little bit of a wild card too, in that, I mean, I think he's like a high upside potential wild card.
I think someone like Quinn Cook, you can find a good matchup to where you can maybe put him in like 4 minutes of a game to give somebody a break, and in that 4 minutes, if he can get you 6, maybe 8 points, just kind of quick buckets, that's sort of going to be where his impact is, like 3-4 minutes at a time.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is his I mean, he's shooting marginally fewer. Is he? Let's see. Yeah, he's shooting fewer three-pointers per game than he was the previous years. But this is the worst three-point shooting season of his last three, and he still made 38%, 37.9%. The 2 years prior, he was at 44 and 40. So, I mean, he's capable. And, and I think it's kind of like you said. He can make shots, and I think when he's hot, he can make a few in a row. Like he plays hard. Yeah, I think it's kind of what you said. If you can get sort of a good half quarter burst, or you know, he might give you a really solid quarter or two here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you know one of the things as we were talking about some of the potential replacements and or how Bradley's minutes or contributions are filled. I'm glad we're visiting Danny Green, because this was you know one of the big free agent acquisitions that people were celebrating after, obviously, the Anthony Davis news came down. And even though Danny Green has, I don't want to say taken a step back, but hasn't quite been as prolific as he was with Toronto in their championship-winning season, his minutes are slightly down. His efficiency is slightly down. His efficiency is far down from the three-point line. I mean, 45.5 with the Raptors, 37.8 with the Lakers. There's nothing wrong with the 37.8. But Danny Green is, again, one of those guys kind of comparable to KCP even, where KCP is going to have a night where he goes 5 of 7 from deep. Danny Green's going to have a night where he goes 4 of 5. And then the next game, they both might go 2 of 15 combined. So you'd like to see a little more consistency from both of those guys on the offensive end. But I think defensively, you can both kind of count on both of those guys to make sure that they bring it. And the thing about Danny Green that never shows up in the box score is the positioning that he's in, the footwork, the way that he challenges guys in terms of hands and face defensively, and all of those sort of off the score sheet statistics that don't show to the casual user. But once you really watch him day in, day out, you get to get a sense for what his value is to the team. So I'll be curious if, you know, he was averaging about 25 minutes a game. I'll be curious if that kind of ticks up closer to 30 or if that stays consistent, because a lot of these guys, you know, I don't expect them to just step back into the amount of minutes that they were playing, at least not initially right off the bat with such a long layoff. So the Lakers are going to have to sort of play around with their depth. And I think all of these guys are going to get an opportunity to sort of show what they can do in various roles. And with that in mind, you know, one of the big questions, ironically, as we were discussing just before we started taping the show, is that, you know, who knew that in the year 2020, Dwight Howard's presence on the Lakers would be a continued question mark, and more importantly, an actual thing that people care about, because it's not the story of the Dwight mare, but instead it's this redemption story where Dwight signed for nothing, he's come in, he's proven to be a critical cog, really, in the rotation in terms of taking those minutes at center, especially behind JaVale on nights where JaVale hasn't had it going. Now, there was some conversation prior to this restart process getting started, or the restart process getting restarted, I should say, that DeMarcus Cousins potentially could be signed by Lakers. But then we had a report that DeMarcus Cousins is going to sit out the Orlando restart as he continues to rehab. But then his agent a few hours later said, you know what, not so fast. He's still considering all of his options. So I don't think it's likely that the Lakers proceed forward with re-signing DeMarcus Cousins on the expectation that he's going to come in and sort of be that rotation piece after a full year off where he's rehabbed the injury, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see that necessarily as a likely scenario, although it's a potential scenario. But if Dwight Howard does choose to sit out the Orlando restart, which is highly possible, I mean, Danny Green sat here and said, look, not only is Dwight, you know, vigilant about the social justice issue, but he's got a lot of stuff going on in his personal life, including the sudden death of the mother of one of his children. So Dwight's got a lot on his mind, a lot on his plate. So in the event he is not with the Lakers as the Lakers move forward, it leaves the Lakers in sort of a weird spot with JaVale McGee as their starting center. Now, personally, I expect as the Lakers move forward into the postseason and the rest of the regular season that this team is going to and should be experimenting more with lineups that include Anthony Davis at the five. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that this team, we know the Lakers are best when Anthony Davis is willing to play the five. but I can't imagine him going to be playing big minutes. And we know JaVale McGee isn't going to be playing big minutes. So I want to bring another new-ish name back to the forefront of the table, which is, what is the importance of Markieff Morris now? Because suddenly it feels like he could play a very real role here for the Lakers as this team moves forward.
Yeah, he's someone we didn't get to see a lot of before the season was suspended. You saw a couple of bright moments from him, but yeah, I think he's in that similar vein of KCP and Alex Caruso. He can have a defensive impact on the front court rather than the back court, and he's a decent three-point shooter. So yeah, I think he'll have a role to fill for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
how about you, Emil?
Yes, I mean, I think it's kind of, we talked about matchups for some of these guys, and I think as far as whether we're talking about Anthony Davis playing the five, or even sort of experimenting with a little bit more kind of outside the box ideas with, you know, maybe putting like Markieff Morris at the five just for defensive purposes, and, you know, alongside Anthony Davis. So, you know, I think that's actually, I think that's a role that Morris could play against sort of smaller front courts. Because, I mean, he's a very sort of, he's a, you know, solid, strong guy. So, I mean, I wouldn't be terribly concerned about, you know, him getting sort of just bullied in the post or anything like that. And so, I mean, I think if, I would love to see Anthony Davis play the five. You know, I don't think it's the sort of thing where we're going to see him play, you know, 35, 40 minutes a night at the five. So I think kind of for spot minutes, you know, it's 5, 6, 8 minutes at a time. I think between sort of using Markieff Morris as a small ball five and, you know, I mean, the Dwight thing is a huge wild card. And I completely sort of understand why he, you know, is contemplating not coming back. And I would, you know, I'd fully support him, you know, prioritizing the things that he's got going on in his life over coming back for this run, you know? And so I think, so if they do have JaVale, and like you said, I mean, JaVale McGee has asthma. So that's kind of a potential problem if he were to get the virus. But assuming that JaVale is there, I think kind of using Markieff Morris and JaVale for maybe, you know, 20 minutes, you know, something, yeah, 20, 22 minutes a game at the five, with Anthony Davis spending a little more time at the five too, I think could work.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the things to consider with JaVale's asthma is, you know, remember, he missed some time last season with that really bad bout of pneumonia. We just heard he kind of had flu-like symptoms and, you know, he wasn't feeling well. And then it turned out he had pneumonia, which is obviously very serious for anyone, let alone somebody with asthma. So we're not wishing, you know, illness or downfall on anybody, but we all have to be of the mindset that it's when, not if, these players test positive. I mean, we've seen a number of cases already, even before anyone heads down to Orlando. You know, they're going to be quarantined. They're going to be removed from their team. So if JaVale were to come down with any sort of issue, this Lakers team is suddenly really thin in the middle, and Anthony Davis playing center has never been more important. So the thing that I like about Markieff Morris is not only is he capable of filling some of those, you know, small ball center minutes, it's not somebody I'd feel comfortable trotting out and saying, here's my starting five, but it does give this Lakers team a new dimension that it didn't really have for the majority of the season. And more than anything else, I think this Lakers team, you know, as talented as they are, you always need, I feel like anyway, sort of that, not a wild card in the form of Lance Stephenson or Dion Waiters to keep it current with this Lakers team, but a wild card in terms of somebody who, you know, is going to kind of scrap and, you know, be a dog in the fight. I think of Ron Artest, you know, on those old Lakers championship teams. And, you know, Markieff Morris, even though he only played a handful of games before the season was paused, he was already showing some of that for this Lakers team and saying, look, nobody's going to come in here and sort of punk us around and try to push us around. Like, I'm here to defend my teammates and to scrap and to claw. And I think that's a welcome development for this Lakers team. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at a group now that does have some questions inside, and we haven't even talked about foul trouble or any of these, you know, quote unquote basketball related issues. But I think Markieff Morris's presence is going to be, you know, really important, and tied to that is Kyle Kuzma, because if Kyle Kuzma doesn't show that he's capable of contributing offensively, I mean, we already know what his defensive limitations are without laughing too hard. You know, I think Markieff Morris is going to be a really important player. And, you know, as we transition out of Markieff Morris and into Kyle Kuzma, I ask both of you guys, you know, what do we expect to see from Kuzma? Because to me, this is his third full season. And very honestly, this has been his most underwhelming performance to date of his NBA career.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year was his sort of, it was a pseudo breakout, and I think part of that was just the season was just when LeBron got hurt at Christmas. I mean, the season just kind of became so much of kind of a write-off, and it kind of gave Kuzma a little bit of license to kind of, you know, explore the space and see kind of what he could be and things like that. But I think some of the numbers I'm looking, I mean, even last year, he was only a 30% three-point shooter. So I think there was a little bit of that was, a little bit of that, I think, was a bit of a fool's gold. And I think, you know, he's getting to the line less. And I mean, I feel like his confidence has taken a little bit of a hit, both because of, I think, a little bit of uncertainty about what his role is, because, you know, I don't know if he's quite the caliber of player where you say that, okay, so we have LeBron, we have Anthony Davis, and Kyle Kuzma is our, you know, young star. He's not definitely the number three option, because there's probably other guys who are, you know, legitimate, you know, kind of NBA players. I mean, I would imagine, you know, KCP or, you know, like Danny Green or someone like that coming in and saying, you know, kind of, I'm not sure that this dude's better than me. You know, like he was a good player on one terrible team, and then on a team that got bad after LeBron got hurt. So, but I don't know if there's anyone that was going to come in and say that, you know, yeah, our big three is LeBron, AD, and Kuzma. So I think his confidence took a little bit of a hit there. And then I think just from a pure kind of X's and O's perspective, I mean, I don't know if he's fully, I don't know if he has a strong grasp on what exactly his role is and what everyone's kind of demanding of him.
I think that's, you know, what you said is one of the biggest things with Kuzma, is that so many Lakers fans, and I think some even within the organization, sat here upon the initially constructing the roster with AD and LeBron and around them accordingly and said, okay, now we got our big two dogs. Kuzma can just slide into that tertiary role off the bench. He can come in, be that 15 to 20 point a game scorer, no problem. Well, in theory, that sounds great, but in reality, it's a different story, because his numbers as a sub are far lesser than what they are as a starter. My issue with Kyle Kuzma is that, you know, along with the things that you said, he probably doesn't know what his role is. He doesn't know how to fulfill it. He's never really been asked to play that super sub role to date in his career. But more than anything is, you know, what I've said since the beginning of the season is that Kyle Kuzma is going to have to, for this particular Lakers team, do some of those things that he is unfamiliar doing. We know that Kyle Kuzma can score the basketball if you give him, you know, 15 to 20 shots a game and say, get out of the way, Kyle Kuzma's going to take the shot. But he doesn't need to do that on this team. In fact, I'd argue it's more important that he does some of those other things. And from what we've seen, he hasn't really done a lot of those other things, at least not on a consistent basis. And so when you just look at his production across the board, not only has it been sort of staggered in terms of, you know, 8 points here, 25 here, et cetera, et cetera. It's not like he's averaging 14, 15 on the head a game, but he's still got a little bit of that D'Angelo Russell in him, where he comes down the court and instead of saying, what's the best play or what's the best move for this Lakers team, it's Kyle Kuzma's got the ball, what's the best move for Kyle Kuzma? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's where I think would benefit him most, if someone kind of sits him down and like really defines his role. Because yeah, we've seen far too many times where he comes in, the first thing he wants to do is put up a couple shots and see the ball go in the basket. And if it doesn't go in, that's sort of the indicator that he's going to have a pretty bad game the rest of the night. Mm-hmm. And so I think if someone sits him down and sort of explains his role and he gets it, then I think he'll be less inclined to have to feel like to make an impact scoring that way.
And I think Emil, you make a good point too, because his first two professional seasons, he was averaging 5.6 and 6 3-point attempts per game. Now that's down this year to 4.4, but his 3-point percentage has never been lower at 29.7. And in addition to that, he's only averaging 2.5 free throw attempts per game. So I feel like Kyle Kuzma, some of that confidence that you were speaking to, he could actually kind of re-derive for himself by attacking the basket, getting to the line, and to JC's point, seeing the ball go through the basket, which might help him to be a more efficient player overall. But I think that's what Kyle Kuzma needs to focus on, and I'm very curious to see how the Lakers integrate him, because this starting five is now different, obviously, without Avery Bradley and with some of the moving parts accordingly. So as we sit here and as we prepare for the Lakers to move forward and the NBA to move forward, what is sort of the ideal starting five for each of you for the Lakers? And then who are your super subs or, you know, sort of reserves of note who are going to have to play important roles, let alone productive ones?
So even before that, just I'm going to jump back to Kuzma for 1 second, just because while you were chatting, I pulled up his basketball reference page, and I don't know the calculations that go into all this, but my mind is blown that his usage rate is just about the same as what it was last year. And I realize he's doing it more with second units, but he has negative offensive win shares, but he actually almost has as many defensive win shares as he did last year. And it's breaking my brain. I don't understand this, but as I was looking at it, it just doesn't fully compute. But so I think that's kind of the thing. It's like we'll move on to the roster kind of construction parts. But I think it's really he's lost sight of how to actually add value. I think it's what you were speaking about, where he thinks that if he can get himself off, if he can get going, then that's best for the team. And yeah, in theory it is, but I think he sort of sacrifices a lot of sort of smaller things that he could be doing that add value in pursuit of just sort of getting himself rolling.
Absolutely. No, well said. And I think that's the biggest piece, is that, you know, when the Lakers brought Kyle Kuzma into the league, they needed his offense, right? That was a team that struggled for offense, and so they needed him to play that sort of more comfortable, more familiar role. Now, like anything else, as you become more familiar with something and you operate within a certain context, it can become harder to sort of alter the way in which you approach things. And so the longer and longer you go playing a similar style of basketball or engaging in a similar style of any activity, the harder it is to make that change. That's why we see even guys like, you know, when Kyrie Irving first came into the league, it was probably the first time he was asked to play defense since he was in eighth grade. So he kind of had to relearn what that is. And on the NBA level, that's obviously the hardest level of competition for any of these guys. So anything that's new comes with these additional challenges based on the quality of the competition. So Kyle Kuzma is still an important player in this Lakers dynamic. But if he is going to prioritize offense first and be a negative contributor on that end of the floor, that sort of tells you that he's not fulfilling his ultimate value to this particular construct.
Absolutely right. Yeah. And I mean, I think to your point, so sort of the when you were talking about the ideal kind of starting five. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we're talking about it, and I know there's wild cards. I guess the big one being Dwight, but. I mean, I do think that it's – you go with kind of LeBron, AD, KCP, and then those final two spots. I mean, I'm interested to hear, you know, your guys' takes on this. Because I would go LeBron, AD, KCP, Danny Green, and JaVale, I guess, is just the core starting lineup that I would go with. I mean, I guess maybe if you want to deploy Danny Green as, I don't even know if Danny Green's come off the bench at any point in the recent past. But I was thinking maybe if you want to use Danny Green as kind of a 3-and-D guy coming off the bench and not kind of burn him and KCP at the same time. I mean, maybe you could do Markieff instead of Danny Green. I mean, I would kind of – I'd possibly experiment there. I'm interested to see what you guys think as far as sort of ideal starting fives.
Sure. JC, what do you think, man?
Yeah, as far as like LeBron, KCP, and Anthony Davis, yeah. Danny Green I do think is essential to start because I think he – is sort of a pairing with LeBron in how he mm-hmm. he spaces out the court, and so in that sense, I don't necessarily think Markieff would fit there. I like JaVale starting because I do like how he tends to set the defensive tempo when he's aggressive with blocks and things like that. Because I notice he starts and then he doesn't end up playing a lot. And even towards crunch time minutes, sometimes Dwight will get more of the crunch time minutes or if they even have a center at all. But, right. Yeah, JaVale's impact has seemed to be to sort of set the tempo on the front court defensively.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And I agree, JC, with the spacing component. I think that's why I would also have KCP and Danny Green out there on the court in the first five, just because it opens things up so much for LeBron and AD. You think about that pick and roll with KCP and Danny Green both settled in the corners or something to that construct. And JaVale can also participate in that pick and roll. But as we've discussed, you know, JaVale can play short spurts and not much more than that. So if you go with that first five of LeBron, KCP, DG, AD, and JaVale, it leaves you Caruso, Kuzma, potentially Dwight Howard, Markieff Morris off the bench, not to mention guys like Rajon Rondo, Quinn Cook, and some of the others that we've discussed. And I think that's probably what the Lakers will wind up doing in terms of the first five. I'm curious about Kuzma, as we've been discussing, because you could make an argument that either KCP or DG, and I would think that it would be KCP in this construct, who would sub out of the first five in favor of Kuzma. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that Kuzma does enough defensively or enough to space the floor to really rectify or really justify, is a better word, that change. And the other thing that happens there is that if you do take Kuzma out of the second unit and put him in the first, you're left without a clear, we'll call it a clear scoring threat, air quotes, in that second unit, because then it would be Caruso and KCP and Markieff and Dwight Howard. And, you know, if you need points, you're not looking at any of those guys going, okay, this guy can get me 10 quick points here in 6 minutes. He might be able to, but, you know, I know at least Kuzma can have that attacker's mentality. So I feel like that's probably the direction they're going to go as we move forward. But I think I come back to the starting five and still look at that five spot and go, man, you know, JaVale, 15 to 20 minutes. You could probably put Keith there for 8 to 10 minutes. So if JaVale plays 20 and Keith plays 8 inside, that's still 20 minutes at center. And I'm looking at Anthony Davis going, well, I'm glad you've been bulking up during the quarantine because we're going to need you to play inside a little bit more frequently.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, I think that's going to be necessary. And I think there's another thing too, that, you know, between the sort of the regular season element and then the playoffs element, I think the roster usage and the rotations are probably going to get sort of playoff-ish relatively quick. I mean, I think you maybe give, you know, the guys like LeBron and AD, sort of you give your stars maybe, I think, 8 or 10 games to sort of ramp up their intensity and ramp up their workload. But I mean, come the playoffs anyway, and the thing is, you get LeBron, who's now LeBron and Anthony Davis, who are both healthy, completely rested, and able to sort of just gear up for a kind of a like a foot to the floor, you know, just sprint, like an all out sprint for through the playoffs. Like they don't have to worry about kind of the dog days of the regular season so much. And so I mean, I think what will probably happen is too, I would imagine, I mean, LeBron and AD together are devastating, but I think you kind of stagger their minutes more too, so that you have fewer lineups where, you know, you're relying on Kuzma and KCP and guys like that for a bucket. you at least have one superstar on the floor sort of for every vital minute.
Oh, yeah. In my ideal world, LeBron and AD are obviously part of this Lakers starting five until neither of them want to play basketball anymore. But from yeah. that point moving forward, you do stagger their minutes. And we sort of saw that, you know, as the season was ongoing prior, where they started to play around with the substitution patterns where LeBron would play the whole first quarter, or then he would come out sort of at that four-minute mark and then go back in. And I think they started to stagger those minutes intentionally because they realized, oh, you know what? We actually don't have that go-to scorer on our roster besides either of those two guys. And we really need to make sure one of those is on the floor at any given time. I mean, even in the event where either LeBron James or Anthony Davis, and this is counterintuitive to say, but in the event that neither of those guys is the primary offensive option on any particular possession, it gives a guy like Kyle Kuzma or any of those secondary pieces more room to operate because the focus is so heavy and so predominant on those two superstars. Whereas when you put Kyle Kuzma on the floor with Caruso and Rondo or Markieff Morris, and Kyle Kuzma's looking to get his own shot off, well, we know where the threat is here, so we can collapse and sort of focus on that a lot better. And so I'd like to see the Lakers, you know, be more mindful of that. And the biggest thing for me is that, you know, of these new sort of machinations and pieces, specifically with respect to not only Markieff Morris, but Dion Waiters, potentially J.R. Smith if he enters the mix, although I'm not counting on a damn thing from him besides entertainment value, is that, you know, how do you produce when the Lakers do have those stretches where they can't seem to buy a bucket, right? Who is that person who steps up? And personally, I know that, as you've mentioned, Emil, you know, the memes and the MVP chants are sort of out of control for Caruso, but I really do think that if the Lakers are going to play their best brand of basketball, that three-man group of Caruso, LeBron, and AD, which is semi-ridiculous to say, but I'm going to say it, needs to be prioritized. And I think that anything short of 25 minutes a game for Alex Caruso, which is pretty much what Avery Bradley was playing prior to the season being paused, would be selling this Lakers team short of their ultimate potential.
Yeah, in addition to Caruso's like overall high net rating, his net rating specifically when he's on the court with LeBron is insanely high. I forget what the number is. Crazy, I forget where I found it, but his impact is a real thing. Like his counting stats aren't impressive, but yeah.
Yeah, and like he's a guy that like just generally sort of the intangible thing that I've always thought of with players on teams that I've been rooting for is like he's a guy you trust, you know? Like he's not, it's sort of like the anti JR Dion Waiters thing where, you know, if he has the ball, you know, he's not going to completely like flub, you know, like there might be things that are beyond his ability, but he's not going to make a boneheaded play. He's not going to sort of go rogue and try to do more than he can do. He's a good, solid, trustworthy player.
Mm-hmm.
I think so too. And I think the biggest thing for the Lakers is, you know, you look at this team and you say, okay, regardless of who's on the floor, and this has been my sort of overarching, I don't want to say critique or criticism because that might be too strong, but sort of my overarching concern is that, you know, when the Lakers, before the season stopped, okay, temporarily, the Lakers were playing their best stretch of basketball. There's no question. But prior to that, what we saw from this team is that, at least in my eyes, too often the Lakers would sort of try to respond to their opposition as opposed to enforcing their will. So they say, oh, I see how you play. I can play this way too, and I can beat you at your own game. But the Lakers have enough talent, enough capacity, and are well-coached enough to implement their system, play to their strengths, and sort of push that down the throat of their opposition. Because once you start getting into that game, especially in the playoffs of we can beat you at your own game, teams do flip the switch. They do take that extra gear. And I worry about that because all of a sudden, if the Lakers find themselves in that 12, 15-point hole early, not only does it put the extra stress on LeBron and or AD, but it also sort of, you know, really forces the Lakers to play a certain way. And when you have this level of talent on one team, you should never be forced to play a certain way. You should always be able to play your way and respond accordingly. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, beginning of the second quarter, maybe last half of the third quarter is where they need to focus on not letting not letting too much water into the boat as far as like when LeBron is sitting. At all points, either LeBron or AD should be on the court. They should never be off the court together.
Yeah.
And I think too, you know, guys like Jared Dudley, you know, he's the Joakim Noah of the Lakers, right? He's going to be the ultimate sort of cheerleader, towel waver. He might get 3 minutes here and might hit a couple of threes, but we're not going to count on him. I think we'll kind of finish with this thought, which is, you know, of the questions surrounding any team, but in particular Lakers, because obviously that's what we're here to discuss. I think my biggest question going forward, besides the Avery Bradley who fills his role, which we've discussed and sort of all agreed that it's going to be KCP and Caruso more likely than not in terms of who fulfills that role, is the center spot. Because you look at the Lakers depth chart, just flat on the depth chart, it's JaVale, it's Dwight, it's AD, it's Markieff Morris, and then if you really want to go small, it's Kyle Kuzma, okay? Kyle Kuzma's not a center, so I'm not even going to pretend that's like a realistic option. So in the event that Dwight sits out, in the event that JaVale McGee is forced to miss time, this Lakers team is really going to have to think about Anthony Davis playing substantial minutes inside. And if that's the plan for the playoffs, then that's something I want to see in these last few regular season games, because you have to at right now prepare for the postseason, because this team's goal isn't just to finish the regular season. It's to participate in the postseason, go deep, and ultimately win the title. So in the event that you're starting AD at the five, right, which I don't know the Lakers are willing to consider yet, but in that event, you know, I think there's potential for Kyle Kuzma to move into the starting lineup. I think there's even potential for Markieff Morris to move into the starting five if you want to keep Kuzma in that bench role. So it's really going to depend for me. I think that's the biggest question, is what happens at center, not only in terms of the personnel, but also how willing are the Lakers to play AD, and how willing is AD to play those substantial minutes at the five. What is sort of the biggest question for you guys as we prepare to move forward with this Lakers roster? Try to focus on one position or one particular minutes battle, if possible.
So as I look at it, I mean, I'm thinking of, so the one that you raised is actually a very valid one. And as you were talking, I mean, I think the roster is not ideally suited to do it, but in a pinch sort of, and this is more of a kind of a playoff type, you know, throw a curveball for half a quarter or something like that. I mean, you forget that LeBron is the ultimate wild card too, and that in a pinch, particularly sort of in a playoff atmosphere where there's not sort of, and especially in this type of atmosphere where there's not going to be traveling and there's no, you know, particularly in the playoffs, I mean, I don't think there's going to be like tons of like back-to-backs and stuff like that. You can even have LeBron sort of position up a little bit and, because, I mean, he's still the guy who played every position against Golden State, you know, a couple
he's
years
still
ago.
Still LeBron F. James, baby.
Right. Yeah. I was trying. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. We kind of like, and it's amazing. I love it. But, like, we kind of just go, like, yeah, well, and then there's LeBron. You know, not kind of sort of glossing over the fact that it's, like, it's the ultimate sort of superstar, supernova, like, Swiss Army knife, you know? Like, he's everything. And so, I guess in a pinch you could probably do that, but kind of as a corollary to that, like, I was thinking of sort of the point guard, non sort of LeBron. So it's Caruso, it's, you know, Quinn Cook and Rajon Rondo. And I think that's why I'm kind of like, I think I'm mentioning Quinn Cook, and that I'm crossing my fingers so that he can kind of take any minutes that potentially would fall to Rondo. And so that we don't have to do that too much. So, but I'm interested to see sort of how they handle sort of ball handling and sort of the quote, the traditional point guard between sort of the Caruso, Rondo, Cook trio.
Well said. JC, what about you?
Yeah, I think they need to figure out how they're going to manage the minutes when LeBron is going to be resting, and how they need to keep up the mostly, I think, most important defensive intensity. You don't need to keep up as much offensive intensity or efficiency. You just need to not give up too much on that end. I think the most important thing when LeBron sits is to maintain defensive intensity and not offensive.
And I think from non-player perspective, but overall team perspective, and I'll just sort of conclude with this, is, you know, when the Lakers season was paused like everybody else in the rest of the league, Lakers are first in field goal percentage at 48.5%, but 17th in three-point field goal percentage at 35.5%. So while though I love the first and field goal percentage, I'd like to see that three-point percentage come up because it's going to be tough. Even though the Lakers can play defense, it's going to be tough to compete with some of those teams that like to stroke it from the outside, especially in this particular format, if the Lakers can't connect on their shots from deep. So before we sign off, I need to say thank you. We need to say thank you, Emil. It was wonderful having you. You guys, you got to follow his work at Hardwood Hype on Twitter, hardwoodhype.com on the website. Of course, you can follow us. JC is at JCDeLeon1 on Twitter. I'm at Ethan_Noroff, just one F, even though it sounds like two. You can follow the show at Hoopball Lakers and the whole Hoopball family at Hoopball Tweets on Twitter. Guys, it was a lot of fun talking about the Lakers. I'm glad we can have basketball conversations in the midst of the more important conversations we're having as a society and we need to continue to have. But I'd like to focus on some good news because I think we can all use it, which is that Lakers basketball will be back. It will look different, and we still have a lot of questions, but the Lakers season is officially back, and I am thrilled about it.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, guys. It was JC, Ethan, it was a blast. Yeah, it's going to be strange, but I'm eager to see sort of what it looks like. And, you know, I mean, there's so many more important things to be thinking about, but if it can be done safely, and it seems like precautions are being taken, it's going to be fascinating. And also, I mean, it's going to be fun to have this Laker team back.
No question about it, as safely as possible. But we'd be remiss to say, as safely as possible, but it's still all about the money. Okay, let's call it what it is. So the Lakers season is back. The NBA is back. We're happy about it. We understand the context. This Lakers team has some questions, but they've had questions since the start of the season. And at 49-14, most of those questions have been answered. Hopefully we continue to talk about the Lakers in a positive light, deep playoff run ahead, and we're going to be back with more episodes as we continue to gear up for the restart of the season. So until next time, for JC and Emil, I'm Ethan. We out.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.